could help you, like the Mitchell family, the Cater Mitchell, and Creed Fairfield, could help you, like the Mitchell family, the Cater Mitchell, and Creed Fairfield. They, Creed wasn't in the brewing business, but he in the supply business. And Mitchell had equipment. He would give you boilers and things like that. And they did very well. And I have to say one thing, I knew all of them. And Mitchell was as fine a man as I ever done business with. But when you told him you would do something, he let you have the equipment. That's what he expected. And if you didn't, you didn't need to come back. And those people, as I say now, those people were people that made tremendous money. But I'm thinking of Father Mitchell, Decatur. His name was Decatur. He has a son that's called Decatur now that handles all the Mitchell family trusts and everything. They lived over on Country Club Drive. And everything that they had built was built with brick, because he got brick from the boilers that they had. And Decatur, young Decatur, he lives on Pacific, and I don't know what that's country, that's not Country Club Drive, but it would be about 3900 block right on the corner. And if you ever go up by there, you don't have any trouble finding his house, because it's on the south side of the street and it's on the corner, and he's got a brick wall up almost.
San Antonio.
Yeah, San Antonio. He's just for you, right on the corner. He's a very fine person, even though he owns half of all of them. I thought that was my tie, but it's not.
No, that's what I put on you.
Okay.
So you were successful with your first oil well.
That's right.
So you decided to drill another one?
No, we weren't. We run into this fault. If we'd had the equipment then that we have today, we'd have went right through the fault, and we'd have been right on top of the gold mine. But we couldn't get through. We felt that somebody was unhappy and had dropped something in the well, and if we were in there trying to grind this up, we tried to fish it out, but it was just the formation itself. And we stayed with that thing and spun our wheels to. We finally tried to put the well on, but we didn't get produced. And I had to go back and work some more. But my partners didn't. They went to Torrance and drilled some wells over there, but it was a town lot situation, and those wells didn't last long. And they came back to Long Beach, and we went back in later and drilled four or five more wells.
Mm-hmm.
They were all on the Signal Hill. I never ventured off the Signal Hill until in the 50s. And I went to Clingavan and we drilled eight wells up there. But that wasn't with my original partner, Spells. That was with another partner, a man named McFarland. And then we bought another lease, land and all, in Santa Maria. And but it was a producing lease. And we bought the land and the whole lease at that time. But then I bought the wells here on Signal Hill later in 19. I had a heart attack in 1964. And my son had gotten out of the service and he worked for me. And the doctors had told me that I was going to have to slow down. So we had two companies at that time, and we put the oil companies all in one company, and the other things that we had, the securities and the land, we put in another company. And that went along, and I got feeling better. And in 1971, when the major companies had got together and decided that we were going to have a water flood. Now we have across Signal Hill, we have a fault line. Now I was telling you where we got into the fault up on 29th in California. That fault line goes all the way around. Now everything that's on the north side of the fault was where the wells got their production from gas. Well, as gas dwindled away, the production fell down. And that's when they decided they was going to go in with water flood. The major companies that had wells on this side, was what we called the water drive, they decided to sell all of the wells on this side. And at that time, I went in and bought 10 wells from ARCO, and I went back into the oil business, and into the oil wells. And we did have two or three wells that was on the other side, and major companies then, it was the three major companies that was in the water flood. I was highly in favor of the water flood because I thought at that time it was going to be the entire field. But the major companies were big enough that they went to the state and got permission to flood whatever they wanted to flood. And they didn't come on the south side of the fault line. They stayed on the north side of the fault line. And the wells that we had that was on the north side of the fault line was mostly in the area with Texaco. Texaco was not interested in buying anything. But a company named Sun came in and they bought the wells that was on this side that people wanted to sell them. And we sold everything that we had that was going into the flood. And got out of that side of it. And I don't say it was a smart move, but I don't think it hurt us because the flood has not developed as to what they expected it to do. And in the major companies, Shell has completely sold out. ARCO has completely sold out. And the only one that's left is Texaco. And they would like to get out. And I think they will eventually. Texaco, I think, would have been out now. But they found out in the law that a well that's been abandoned, if it hasn't been properly abandoned, now I don't mean to want to say that any of us ever abandoned a well, that it wasn't done properly, but it was done according to the law at the time we did it. Now, it's become apparent that the law can make you go back into that well. If they can't make the landowner go back into it, they can't make you go back into it, then the state's responsible. So in most cases, they'll either get the person that drilled the well willing to go back into it, or they'll make the man that owns it, that has the land, wants to develop, do it. And it's hurt the value of the land by this law. But and Texaco decided to sell. Run put the bid list out and everything. They were about ready to sell it, but they were only selling the production wells. It's like the wells I bought from Litchfield. They sold me the producing wells, and we bought them on what they were doing. But they're on part of the property that I bought from them. There were 18 other wells that had been previously abandoned. Now that's still hanging in the air. they would like to, the landowner would like to hold us. But the law don't throw it back on us because I didn't buy that. So Texaco had their properties up for sale. And they got it down to where there was only two bidders left. They were dealing with it. And their legal department said, I think we should not sell this property to them. And we should come up with a different bid list. And we'll go ahead and abandon these wells before we do that. And that's what they've been doing. And that's what the major companies are all doing now. And there's 192 wells on the property that Texaco had that had not been previously abandoned. I mean they were abandoned, but they don't meet today's standards. So they've decided that they're going to abandon those wells because they don't think that they can pass that on to you. And then they're going to offer that property again for sale. All of the major companies are working toward getting out of the basin. The rules and regulations, and air pollution, and all the contamination soils and things of that kind, they're just too rough. Most of the major companies that have a large enough tract will go in and clean the properties up and then develop it themselves. But otherwise, they want out. They're going out into bigger and wider areas.
Okay. In some of the things that I read, it said that you got into other aspects of the oil business.
Well, this company right here is a service company. They do work for everybody. I have a very small interest in this company. I wouldn't want to say that that's a major part of my business, but the other partner that I had, his name was McFarland. He was general manager of this company, and he and I became interested in oil wells and in the equipment. We bought a lot of the equipment, and it was operated by this company. Now, he and I own two of the as deep wells that was ever drilled on Signal Hill, but we lost those when they built the San Diego Freeway. We had two 10,000-foot wells, and we lost those when they put the San Diego Freeway in. But that's where the other business I had was with this company here called Oil Well Service. We didn't call the company that we had Oil Well Service. The company that he and I had was called Consolidated Oil Well Service. And when he died, why, I took that whole company over, and I was going to incorporate the name. But the Corporation Commissioner wouldn't allow me to because it was already had the name of Oil Well Service Incorporated. He thought it was too close. And the other owners of Oil Well Service came in and bought an interest in that company, so we did get permission then because of the other owners. The Corporation Commission granted us the company. But the operation that that he and I had was in the northern part of the division, Bakersfield and Colingo, and up in there. He was a pretty shrewd individual. We did very well. The setup that he had. But he became ill and got valley fever, and he passed away. I'm sure you're not interested in what his problem was, but he should have never died. And but when he died, then I took the company over. We still operated under that name, but this business not too easy. Competition is very great, and labor is hard to get. And this business depends highly on labor. And the work is around the clock, a lot of it. A lot of people they just don't like to work after dark. And it's really awfully embarrassing to have work and you can't get people to do it. But this is not the only company, but all the people that's in this particular industry, the outside work is not the most cleanly work, but you find some people that like what they do, and you don't have any problem, but the majority of the younger people, they can go out and work for a plumbing company or a roofing company and all they like, and make as much or more than making this industry. And it's, well, I'd have to tell you, I feel that Signal Hill is on its last 10 or 15 years. Now, a lot of people tell you, no, they'll still be oil producing here 40 years from now, but I don't believe that. Your environmentals and it isn't that you couldn't still produce oil, but it's the point that play isn't there and the fight is not there. You don't have the desire. I'd like to sell my industry and get out myself. But the industry, now don't misunderstand me. The industry has been awful good to me. But I've worked pretty hard on it. And like poor old Saul Alexander, he was an oil buyer, was part of his. And he was a hard worker. He was out early in the morning. He was beating the bushes. And he was one of our founders when we built the petroleum club. And I have a lot of respect for him. I want to tell you one other thing about the industry itself. I don't believe there's any other industry in the world that has the support or the loyalty that the oil industry has. Man can come in and sit down in that chair and you can tell him, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. Would you like a piece of the action? And he'd say yes. You can go ahead and do the job, and when it's done, you can bill him and you'll get your money. If it's successful, there isn't anybody that isn't glad to shell it out. But there's a lot of people don't like to shell things out on a dead horse. But that's not true in the oil industry. I would say that there's less people that ever went back on their word in the oil industry than there is any industry that I know. Real estate brokers, they don't want to even leave you till the last end. And they'll tell you anything to make a deal. They're like car dealers. I have a map here. I wanted to show you that now this is part of the property right here that I took over from Arco.
Yeah.
But now this is California. And this here is Atlantic. Now, Signal Hill covers about this area, like this in here. Mm-hmm. Now, every one of those dots in there is an oil well.
Right.
Now, you're looking at these from the surface.
Yeah.
But if you could just was able to look at them from the bottom up,
yeah,
you'd have an entirely different picture. When they built the Memorial Hospital over here,
mm-hmm,
they went down in there. That was a kind of a gully in there.
The frog pond?
Yeah. And when before they built, and I don't know that they found all of the oil wells, they looked like telephone posts sticking up, because they went down there 20 and 30 foot deep. And it would have been a sight. I'm sorry that we didn't take some pictures of it, to give a person some idea of what it was actually like. Now, one other thing I was going to tell you, I had a little cracking plant right in here.
Mm-hmm.
And in June the 10th, 1933, that plant blew up.
Yeah.
It had an explosion. There wasn't anybody in that plant got out. Now, this is a funny thing. It'd be hard to understand. I lived down on Pine Avenue in Long Beach, and I heard the explosion. It's about 3:30 in the afternoon. I run outside, and I can see the dust. I jumped in my car, and I went up there. And all of these derricks in here, and there were some 20 of them at that time, they all had wooden derricks over them, and they were in splinters on the ground. There was no derrick standing. And that's the property that I bought from them. That was 1933, and I bought it from them in 1971. It's a small world when you really get down to think about it. But there was never too much ever about that. But at the same time, ARCO was building a building in Los Angeles, and they had $250,000 worth of gold leaf that was on the building. And were you acquainted with the fact that they went through bankruptcy?
Yes. Well, you've dug up the bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've dug through quite a bit of this back history.
Yeah.
But I would guarantee you there's not too many people knew about this little debt. In fact, they had a tank farm right in here.
Yeah.
There's a wall still around that area where the tank farm was. But I don't believe I ever saw a more devastating thing when I got up there. The cars that was parked along this street right here, the tires were blown out of them, the windows were blown out, and there wasn't a living soul got out of that plant. And to this day, I don't believe it's ever been any knowledge actually what happened, other than the plant just simply blew up. I'm sure that there's very few people that remember about it. How did you get the information about it?
Oh, I guess I talked to people who lived in Signal Hill a long time who said, well, we went through the earthquake and it hardly caused any damage. So we had, when the cracking plant blew up, it just about wrecked our house.
Well, that is, well, I lived at 1500 block on Pine, and this is up in the 2700 block.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought at first, when it first hit, that it was another earthquake. It's odd. It was just 3 months to the day later. The earthquake was March the 10th, and this was June the 10th.
Yeah, what were you doing during the earthquake?
What was I doing?
Yeah.
Well, in 33, I was still associated with the Edison Company. But I was home when the earthquake hit. And it was sort of odd. My son was going into the hospital at 5 o'clock that evening to have his tonsils removed. And he didn't get to go to the hospital.
I was going to say he was probably saved from that.
Yes, he was. You know, it was terrible in a way, although on the other hand, you have to feel that we were very grateful in other respects. I have to give the city a lot of credit. Of course, people moved out of their houses, and we were fortunate for the weather. That time of the year, you know, the weather normally wouldn't be too good. But It was about a week before it started to rain. People started going back into their houses. But the they'd come by wherever you were. There was a big vacant lot right close to our house where we lived. And the nurses would come by there every day to see how the children were, if you had milk and you had this. And they brought coal and would put it on the corner where you could go get coal for heat.
Mm-hmm.
And they did an awful lot. But I would say for the first 36 hours after the earthquake, there was never a moment that you couldn't hear a siren going. We lived just a few blocks from the Seaside Hospital.
Oh, you did.
Mm-hmm. And it was really kind of nerve-wracking.
Oh, yeah.
But as I say, when this blew up, I thought it was just another earthquake beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived some 25 or 30 blocks. I lived on Pine, and this was the other side of Atlantic,
mm-hmm.
and it was clear up in that 2600 block. But I was fortunate enough to be able to just drive right up in there, because that was before they got any blockades up or anything else. But to see all those wooden derricks and splinters land on the ground, and then think 30 years later, I was so enough to buy the wells. But I'd have to say one thing about ARCO. I used to call it Atlantic Richfield.
Yeah.
But the brains of them now, they don't like the word Atlantic Richfield. I think that was because of the bankruptcy act.
Yeah.
They let you know it's ARCO. Not Atlantic Richfield.
Okay.
That funny part of it was when we put in a bid and they notified us that we were the successful bidder on them, and that to make the check out and send it to Bakersfield. So I went to the bank and got a cashier's check for Atlantic Richfield. And they sent a man back down to have it changed. They said, this isn't Atlantic Richfield, this is ARCO. But the other thing about that, too, now, when they went out of bankruptcy, City Service and one other company, I don't have it on the end of my tongue right now, were the two successful bidders,
mm-hmm.
in 1939. Standard Oil of California thought they had the thing bought. And their bid to buy the company at that time was $37 million. These other two companies bid $39 million. The court gave it to the other two companies, but told them that they had to put men on the board to help run the company. And that each one put men on the board to run it, and they were classed that ARCO was to remain a one-third interest holder in it, and each other two companies had a third. In 1965, now that's 25 years later, the government come along and made City Service and Sinclair was the other company, made them divest themselves of those interests. Said you violated the antitrust law. Now it's pretty rough for me to understand how the government would, 25 years later, when they told them in the beginning what they had to do, and but before this had happened, that is, that they had found Coahoma Valley, and that brought them all out of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had some City Service stock, and I had to give that up and take ARCO stock in its place. I still have ARCO stock. I loved securities because they, as I said, they put bread and butter on my table.
Right.
And they've been very good to me. But I don't have any ill feeling with the oil industry. I want to tell you, I'm awfully glad that my dealings was with Arco, not Texaco. I couldn't get along with Texaco. Texaco told me on a deal that they wanted me to learn Texaco was in a business to make money, not friends. And I thought that was pretty strong language.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you one other thing. I think that's why they lost that lawsuit. But yet, truthfully, what happened there, they should have never lost the lawsuit. But they didn't have the respect and everything in court that they should have had.
Mm-hmm.
And I firmly feel in my own mind, I'd probably get